Welcome back. Another episode, Signals from the Deep. And today we've got a hell of an episode for you. But before we get into the episode, I think it is not only important but necessary to thank our listeners, to thank our fans. And Grant, I wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for you, because I don't know how to set up this microphone here, which sounds tremendous, by the way.
Thank you.
Or that video board, or how everything gets recorded. I have no idea. I got a tough enough time using my phone. But we rely so much on the support of our fans. And we got a great email, a phenomenal email from Narius Fry, who is a British Kraken fan based in Germany. So I wonder, Narius, do your football ties lie in England, or do they lie in Germany now, based in Leipzig? I know there's a Bundesliga team there. I'm a Liverpool fan at heart. Also, Dortmund is my team in Germany, but that's neither here nor there. Sent in an incredible email talking about the work we're doing, the conversations. And now that Narius's relationship with the Kraken is inseparable, and those are the things that we love to hear. So I just wanted to give Narius a shout out here because of how genuine and awesome this email was, and just goes to show that the work we're doing at least is pleasing one person, and if we can get one fan to feel better about themselves and to learn something or to laugh or anything along those lines, just to feel, that's exactly what we're after. So Narius, thank you so much for your incredible email. Hopefully when you listen to this, you're fist pumping in the car or in bed or in the living room or while you're eating, while you're listening to this new episode. And speaking of emails and listeners sending us messages, aside from X, Grant, what is that email that they can send these messages to?
You can email us at signals@seattlekraken.com. We've also got a nice little submission form at nhl.com/kraken/podcast. Mm. And we also have a phone number as well, which I will read at the end of the episode.
Beautiful.
You can give us a call if you want to leave us a voicemail. So plenty of ways to get in touch with us. We do read it. And listen, obviously, mm-hmm. and the highlights we will shout out here. So Narius is a great example.
Yes,
so.
No question at all. And on that note, we got a really great episode today with Evan Pivnik of the Coachella Valley Firebirds. So how about we get it there now? The reason why everyone's tuning in, let's take it away.
All right.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is a huge interview. I mean, this guy is the guy of all guys, and he is a Long Island, New York native. He is the, and I want to stress this, he is the voice of the current second best team in the entire American Hockey League, Coachella Valley Firebirds American Hockey League affiliate of the Seattle Kraken. Evan Pivnik, what's going on, man?
Nick, thanks so much for having me, man. I greatly appreciate it. Thanks for the great intro. I'm doing well here in sunny SoCal. It's weird being a Long Island guy, being like, yeah, I'm a Southern California guy now. But hey, it's took a little getting used to, but I like it out here.
You had to put a little emphasis there on the sunny, didn't you? Because as I look out the window, we're recording this on April 4th, my mom's birthday, by the way. Happy birthday, Mom.
Happy birthday, Mom.
And I'm looking out, rain. Gloom, which is fine. I like that. But what's the weather down in SoCal?
Well, the other day it got up to like 85 degrees, which we weren't prepared for. You know, it's, you know, one of those things where it comes out of nowhere and you got to dig out the shorts, and, you know, all the tough stuff here. It's around 78 today. But hey, I'm spending all day. It's a game day for us here on this April 4th. So I'm spending it all inside the friendly confines of the Acrisure Arena and Burger Foundation Iceplex Complex. So
yeah, and the one thing I'm
sweatshirt and joggers today.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Attaboy. I would love to start. You mentioned it being a game day. What's your typical game day? We're going to delve into your past. We're going to delve into your career, where you've gotten and how you've gotten to where you are. But I want to know, what's a typical game day for you as you prepare for the Coachella Valley Firebirds against San Jose tonight?
Well, today's a TV game, so shout out to our broadcast host, Gino Lamont, who takes the majority of the reins for a TV broadcast. He does all the hosting duties, so he'll do the whole rundown of it. So I don't really have to do as much for a TV game, thanks to him. But, you know, I oversee all the communication side of things, and it starts with an early day, usually here around 8:30 to 9 o'clock in the morning. My morning is consumed by printing, mostly. I'll print the game notes for from the league, the other team, and our team as well. I'll go through all of our credentials, make sure everyone's all set for parking and all their credentials for media, scouts, et cetera. So I'll make sure that's all situated. And I try to get everything done by like 1:30, 2 o'clock when all said and done. So I'll bring this stack of notes down to the coaches and, you know, visiting locker room and whatnot. And I kind of just stick around and make sure that no further fires arise. But yeah, we do that. We film the ever so popular PIVS pregame report on the Firebird social media. Make sure that's knocked out for the day. And then I kind of spend the afternoon. I make my line charts and my fancy sheets and use all the different colors of pens that I have to make sure that I'm ready to go for that game tonight. So I like to give myself a lot of time. I'm at the rink from, as I said, like 8:30 to whatever, 11 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. But you know what? The rink's a great place to be, so I really don't have much complaints about it.
No better place, no matter where you are in the country or this world, to be at a hockey rink. It's a pretty special thing. Evan, before we dive too much deeper into your current day-to-day, which I want to get to for sure, I'd love to go back to your high school days where you were broadcasting for MSG Varsity. You won the V Award for best student play-by-play in the tri-state area, which is New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, for those who may not know. And for those that are listening, Evan is currently displaying the V Award, which is a V. So take me through what you feel when you look at that, the experience, and in your early broadcasting days.
It was funny because, you know, you're a kid, right? You're in high school, and you don't really know how professional broadcasts work or anything like that. I just knew from a young age that I wanted to be a sports broadcaster, especially a hockey broadcaster. Growing up 10 minutes away from Nassau Coliseum, you know, I was able to go to Islanders games and stay out late because, you know, 10 o'clock on a school night, the game would be well over and I was well home by then. So I was able to go to Nassau Coliseum quite a bit. And I had my best friend to this day, Tom Marr. We would go to Islanders games and we would broadcast the game to ourselves. And we would sit in the corner.
I can relate.
Cheap seats. Yep. And we'd bring a tape recorder or do it on the early iPhone days where they first had the voice recorder app, and we would just do it to ourselves. So we get, you know, a copy of the game notes and do it. And we do it for fun. And then in, I think it was my junior year of high school, so 2011, we, our school, Oceanside High School, had a broadcasting class, which was sponsored by MSG Varsity. And for those who don't know, MSG Networks is the big network out in the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. And they did a high school region of it. So they kind of implemented that students start producing some content for their schools. And this is kind of a little ahead of its time, right? Because you look at this now and this is like, oh, yeah, it's a no-brainer in the year 2024. But this is 2010, 2011, where, you know, it wasn't as common as, you know, and not everyone was on Twitter. Not everyone was on, you know, Instagram was kind of up and coming at that point, even if it was. But so this is like you make content to put on the MSG Varsity website. So you'll go under the Oceanside tab and you see all the stuff that we make. So we wanted to broadcast a hockey game. That was our biggest thing. And in our high school, hockey wasn't particularly a sponsored sport. If you wanted to play for the high school hockey team, you had to pay just because it wasn't like a school sanction. I don't really know how the politics of it worked, but we wanted to broadcast a game and they played at the Long Beach Ice Arena. And we just kept hammering our contact at MSG Varsity. Hey, we want to broadcast the game. Like, we want to do this. Like, can you help us do it? And we called the Long Beach Ice Arena and they're like, no way, we're not letting you guys do this. I'm like, what's the harm in this? So finally MSG Varsity, I guess they got so fed up by us constantly badgering them.
Persistence.
They're like, fine. Yeah. They're like, fine, do it. Like, whatever. But we'll, you know, and I guess they thought about it a little bit more. I'm like, okay, well, we'll take advantage of this. So they sent, you know, a guy to kind of not really produce the game because it was a pre-record, like it was a two camera operation with like, you know, two headsets. Like that's all it was. But they provided us the headsets. They provided us the, you know, the camera for it. And it was myself, Tom was doing color, and our friend Zach was the main camera one. So, you know, we did all the classic things of a broadcast. We talked to the coaches beforehand. We got the lowdown of the players, what they liked about the players that we could use into the broadcast. And that was like my first time. I think when the puck dropped, I was like, oh, now I actually have to do this, which is kind of odd. So that was weird. Once the game started, I was like, oh, all the stuff that, you know, I've been broadcasting to myself in the corner of NASA Coliseum and no one's ever heard of before. I, you know, my bedroom voicing over like play by play of NHL video games. And now it's like the first time I think it's ever really been in front of other people. So we do the game, and again, it's a tape, like we just taped it. So we sent it to MSG Varsity. They liked it, and they're like, okay, you know what we're going to do? We're going to make the first ever student produced broadcast that's going to be aired on TV. So I was like, oh, okay. So they put it on TV, and then that was really cool. That kind of led to a couple of other opportunities. Kind of my senior year of high school, I did some lacrosse for them and a couple other sports. I think I did a baseball game too. But yeah, it came time for the MSG Varsity V Awards, which is actually selected by the same people who do the New York Emmys, the New York Arts and Sciences. And luckily I got chosen for best play-by-play announcer in the tri-state area. So that was really cool. Yeah, that was really cool. My senior year of high school, and you know, I still have the award. I think I was looking for something to put in my office here in the Coachella Valley, and I was like, I don't think it's a conversation starter, but you know, it makes me feel as if, you know, it just shows like what, you know, it comes from, I guess, as you said before, persistence, right? We wanted something, and we knew what we would do. We would do a great job if we were able to get the opportunity to do it. We had the opportunity to do it. And we ended up doing, I don't know if it was a great job. I think I watched it. I don't know if I could find the tape of anywhere. It was probably 7 or 8 years ago. And I had a pretty thick Long Island accent that I worked to not, I wouldn't say get rid of, but make myself kind of more of a nationwide kind of dialect. I think the Oceanside Sailors versus the Belmore Merrick Bulldogs. And I think in the first sentence, it said Bulldogs. And I was like, what? And I'm like, I can't watch any more of this. And so it was, it's a great memory for me. It's a great time with some great friends. And it was the first time that I ever really called a hockey game.
So your color commentator, is he somebody who's still doing broadcasting? Has he stuck with it?
Nope, he has not. It's funny. We kind of just like, you know, he do it more for fun. And he was the guy I was kind of comfortable with, you know, big hockey fan. He lives in LA now. So we went to the Kings Kraken game last night together. So I saw him there. So it was great. He's still my best friend to this day, but he's working in the film industry now. So still in entertainment in some aspect, but, no, he hasn't put on the headset since I don't think senior year of high school.
Evan, when you mentioned the NHL video games and broadcasting to those, it brings up some great memories for me because that's where I got my start of playing NHL 07, 08, 09, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, so on and so forth, staying up till midnight, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., which seems really late when you're a young kid. How rebellious, staying up late, just playing the game and broadcasting along as I played. Looking back, I don't know if I liked to do that because I liked the game or because I liked the broadcasting side of it so much. I'd like to think it was a half and half split, probably more so towards the broadcasting side, but I felt like it was, looking back now, it was such a great tool because you could set the game up any which way you want. You can make it game 7 of the Stanley Cup final between two teams that maybe haven't been to the Cup final ever or any sort of situation. And so I just felt like it was this infinite practice. And I too, from time to time would use the old voice recorder on my phone. And every now and again, when I'm feeling nostalgic, I go back and listen. I'm like, man, was I bad. Not that I'm saying I'm any good now, but I just would love to know, like, when you look back, where did the passion for broadcasting start? Because to do things like that, to go to games, to have your tape recorder, you got to have a real undying and genuine passion for the broadcasting side of hockey.
Yeah. And that started when I was really young. My dad, in the mid 80s, he was a minor league baseball broadcaster. He did it for, I think, 3 years in the Yankees organization. So, you know, he was always a big broadcasting fan. So growing up watching sports for me with my dad, it wasn't always, you know, watch this player play the game, right? It was always listen to, like, we're going to watch this game because this broadcaster is calling this game. Like, it was always more sportscaster oriented. So I kind of grew up that way. And living where I did on Long Island, I think that was also a huge help, because you have the, you know, hockey alone, the Islanders, Devils, the Rangers. And, you know, at the time, Howie Rose was calling Islanders games. Mm. Doc Emrick was calling Legends. Devils games. Sam Rosen still calls, Rangers games. And every now and again, you get a Sabres game too. So you get Rick Jeanrette. So those are four iconic voices in broadcasting. Just, you know, flipping around the channel on a given Tuesday night. Between that for hockey and then baseball as well, you know, football, there's so many great voices to listen to. So I was able to grow up and just be able to spend summers listening to the Mets and Howie Rose call a game year round for me, because I grew up a huge Islanders fan. But just hearing different voices call games, I think that really started the passion for me. And again, being kind of geared toward that from a young age, I always kind of had an ear to listen for those guys.
Did you, how long did it take you to find your style, right? Because every broadcaster, play-by-play or color, has a style, and it takes some time to get there. And maybe sometimes you think you're there and then you got a little more growing to do or whatever it might be. Because I think back to the past broadcasts that I've done in prior years, and I just kind of see the maturation process for me. So I'm curious, was there a time where you're kind of like, okay, yeah, I kind of know who I am. I know my go-to phrases. I've kind of got an idea of how I see the game and how I want my call to be.
I think maybe my second to last year in the ECHL, I think it was going into COVID that year, because we didn't play the COVID year. And then the year after that, my last year in the ECHL, I kind of was in my stride. I don't know what it was. I relaxed. That's kind of what I think the biggest thing for me was, you know, I'm not going to get to where I want to be by being someone else or copying someone else's style. And, you know, I just kind of relaxed and said, you know what, this is an awesome job that I'm able to do. It's something that I've wanted to do since I was 7 years old, and I get the opportunity to do it. So have some fun doing it, right? Like, might as well, you know, enjoy it while you can. So for me, that's kind of when it kind of all sunk in, right? Because, you know, the ECHL, it was a great league to start in. You know, there's a lot of things, you know, the travel's tough and the bus rides are obviously long and whatnot, but you feel like that reward, especially when I started in the ECHL, I started as a ticket account manager. And my reward was basically to call games. Like, I did whatever I had to do during the day so that I can broadcast the game at the end of the day. So, you know, I kind of looked at it as I'm working as hard as I can to do what I want to do. And I think that point where I just kind of let it go and said, okay, you know what? I love what I do. I want to do it the way I want to do it. Just kind of relax, have some fun. And if people enjoy it, people enjoy it. If they don't, like, I can't control what people like. And that's another thing too. Like, I'm not going to say I was always like wanting feedback and whatnot, but, you know, I've learned to, like, if people are going to listen, they're going to listen. If they don't, they don't. At the same time too, like, what we do, you know, in broadcasting, we always think of it too from such a microscope, right? We look at it as, oh, everyone's going to hear this little flub or this little, you know, I said the wrong thing. And a lot of times people don't even notice. Like, there's times now where I'm like, oh, I didn't like the way I ended that sentence, or I didn't like that word I chose. And everyone's like, no, I didn't even notice. Like, it was great. So, like, that sort of stuff, like, I think changed my kind of perspective on it.
The older I've gotten, the more I've realized that no matter what you do, half the people are going to like it and half the people aren't. And I feel like if you're doing things the right way, that's just kind of part of life. And in this business that we're in, where, you know, things can happen very quickly, to have the right intentions and to always be on your toes, I think are very, very important things. So I actually think that's incredible advice, Evan. And later on in the pod, I was going to ask you about that, but maybe we can even delve a little bit deeper into it. Before we talk more about the ECHL and being such a great developmental league, take me through your senior year at Bowling Green.
My senior year at Bowling Green was a great one. I did the 5 years in college route. I did 1 year at Nassau Community College. Before that, I was not a great student. I knew, and that I think that just was because same. I knew what I wanted to do in life from a young age. It wasn't like I was, I had no path or anything like that. I knew what I wanted to do, and I didn't know how to get there. And I only had like one track mind. I was like, I want to do this, but so I wasn't a great student. So I went the community college route, which was actually fantastic for me. I worked at the radio station at Nassau and called a couple of games too. I hosted a radio show and I was the sports director for my second semester there. And I got my grades up enough to get into Bowling Green. So, that was really cool for me. So at that point it was my fourth year at Bowling Green. And it was my third year as the play-by-play voice of the team. So I got to travel and do all the fun stuff. It was my first like consistent hockey broadcasting job. So, my senior year was really cool. We had a great team that went to the WCHA championship, lost in double overtime. But hey, it was still a great run for that team and for that, for us there. And then luckily, it was also the 50th anniversary of the Bowling Green Ice Arena, now called the Scott Slater Family Ice Arena, or the Slater Family Ice Arena, after Scott Slater, a big donor to the hockey program. For the 50th anniversary of the Ice Arena, something that was really cool is they brought back a lot of Fire or Falcon alumni for Bowling Green. They brought back all the heavy hitters that you would know from Bowling Green, and they brought back Mike Emmerich to call the game with me, which was really cool. So it was funny. Jason Knabel, who was the assistant athletic director at the time, he called me into his office and he didn't really do this often. He'd be like, "Hi, I need to see you today. Come to my office at 12 p.m. I'm like,
"Oh boy, am I fired?"
I was like, "Oh no, it's my senior year. Just let me go for like it was like February. It was like late January. Like,
couple more months.
We have 2 months. Come on." So he calls me into his office and he's like, sitting down, I'm like, okay, just tell me what's going on. He goes, all right, for the 50th anniversary, we have some plans. I was like, okay, cool. So I'm not fired. And I think that relief of me not being fired kind of like diminished his surprise, because he's like, hey, we want you to call a game with this guy. And he turns his like desktop around and it's a picture of Mike Emmerich. And I think I was just so thrown off by me like keeping my job that he had like GoPros set up to try to get my reaction. He's like, that didn't go anywhere the way I planned it. I was like, sorry, I thought you were firing me. we got to call a game with Doc, and that was really cool for me. And I think it was surreal, right? Because we grew up listening to Doc Emmerich's iconic calls, right? His, every moment of the Stanley Cup final from my childhood, after Gary Thorne did it for ESPN, was all Mike Emmerich, right? It's all his iconic calls. So he's the guy, right? It's like playing on the same line with Wayne Gretzky. Right. So it's funny. I got a text late January. So the game was February 11th. It was actually my birthday. So it was pretty cool to spend my birthday doing that. So I get a text from a Michigan number. It's like, Evan, Mike Emmerich here. Just want to see if you want to touch base today to go over some pronunciations. I'm like, it's January 20th, whatever. We have 3 weeks to the game, and this random Michigan number is texting me that he wants to go over pronunciations for a college hockey game coming up in 3 weeks. I'm like, he's like, can I call you today at like 2 p.m.? I'm like, sure, call me. Like, I thought it was someone playing a joke.
A prank, yeah.
That's what I thought. because, Bowling Green's not too far from Michigan. There's plenty of people who could have a Michigan number. Mm-hmm. I'm like, sure, you call me at 2 p.m. and we'll talk. Sure enough, 2 p.m., phone rings, and then it's Mike Emmerich. I'm like, oh, okay. So it was.
It's the real deal.
It was the real deal. And we talked for like 45 minutes. He wanted to know like stuff about players and of different teams. And again, this is, I think he took off from NBC that weekend just to do the game. So he like said no to doing NHL games just to do that one game, which was really cool. And, you know, he did it like an NHL game. He prepared it the same way. He talked to each team in the locker rooms after morning skate, and he knew stuff about players that I didn't know in my 4 years being with the same guys at Bowling Green. So it was really cool. And the second the broadcast started, I did play-by-play for the first and third. He did play-by-play for the second. And the second he started doing play-by-play, like I almost had to take off my headset because I was laughing because of how surreal the whole experience was. Mm-hmm. So that was really cool.
We've been very fortunate to have some incredible broadcasters, especially play-by-play guys in the NHL over the years. You mentioned Gary Thorne, legendary with ESPN. I think of a guy like the late Dave Schrader. We got a pretty damn good one here in Seattle, Johnny Forslund, future Hall of Famer, no question in my mind. But you know, and I was very, very fortunate with my dad having worked with Doc for 15 plus years at NBC, doing coverage there as the lead team, and just being able to be around Doc. He's legendary on the mic and off the mic because he's the same person. And you knew that whether you were having a conversation with them, whether it be a long conversation or a short conversation, you knew that when you left that interaction with Doc, you were going to be feeling better about yourself. He just has that ability to be engaging, to give you the time of day. And you always found a way to learn something too. Like he's an endless book of knowledge. And when you heard him broadcasting a game, regular season, or playoffs, or Stanley Cup final, you knew it was a big game if you heard Doc's voice. So I'm glad we could talk a little bit about him and just an incredible person.
To go off of that, so here's my favorite Mike Emmerich story, my personal favorite Mike Emmerich story for me. So my first year in the ECHL, it's funny because I texted him like when I was applying for the job in the ECHL. Hey, do you know anyone? Blah blah blah. And you know I think he called the president of the ECHL, the team in the ECHL, and then team in Adirondack. And he said, I don't know what he said, but he got me an interview. So, but whatever. After that, so it's going into the first game of the playoffs. So it's my first ever pro playoff game. I come back to my desk. It's my office phone, and I have a message and it says from Michael Emmerich. Like, okay. So I play it. And it's like, hi, Evan, Mike Emmerich here. Just wishing you the best of luck on the Adirondack Thunder taking on the Worcester Railers tonight in round one of the playoffs. Hope your call goes great. Isaac Izumba, which is a Bowling Green slang. So I was like, this guy called my office phone. He has my cell phone. He called my office phone the day of a playoff game, which I don't know how he even kept up that. It was the first game of the ECHL playoffs.
Yeah.
And he called to wish the team and myself good luck, which was amazing. Like that is my favorite Mike Emmerich story, my personal one, which I hope more people get to hear, because that just shows, like, even when you don't think Doc is paying attention, he's paying the most attention. So it's pretty cool.
Sincere. That's the word I think about Doc is it's sincere with everything he does.
Well, I think it just goes to show, you know, as somebody who hasn't met him, like all I hear about is this, you know, this incredible preparation and kind of knowledge for like the minutiae of everything that's going on around, no matter what's happening. If Mike Emmerich is involved, he is the most prepared, and you don't have to worry about him not knowing what's going on. And so all this just solidifies that.
He has that uncanny ability to, whether you know him or you don't, you feel like you do.
Oh yeah.
You absolutely. Know, like even if you're just a fan and you watch every game he's ever done, it's like, you feel like you kind of know him, and he has that incredible appeal.
The ability to make you feel like you are sitting right next to him.
Yeah.
Whenever you're listening to him call a game.
Yeah. Evan, more on the Adirondack Thunder of the ECHL. You started out, as you mentioned earlier, as an account executive, and you were a broadcaster by night, account executive by day, and then your path with them, kind of transitioned into being the director of community relations. So take me through your experience and the developmental process of the ECHL, because you and I both share that in common where we started our broadcasting careers in that league.
Yeah. As you said, I was an account executive. I wanted a broadcasting job, and I was lucky enough to get one right out of college into the ECHL, and a couple of crazy things happened to get that experience. It was kind of weird because I graduated at Bowling Green and I was looking for obviously a job. So I reached out to Bob Mills, who at the time was the voice of the Rockford Ice Hogs, a Bowling Green guy. I was going to be his intern in Rockford. I was going to be the broadcast intern for the full season, which is something I didn't get to do. Like, I didn't have the full experience of what goes into all of it, right? Being in college, I kind of just called games. That's really all it was. So I was looking forward to doing that. And at that time, I think it was like 2 weeks before I was going to go to Rockford, was when the Adirondack job opened, because Vegas hired their broadcasters. It was the Golden Knights' first season. So they hired Dan Duva out of Syracuse, so the Crunch, and then Lucas Favalli, who was going to be the voice of the Thunder. He came in from Elmira after that team folded. Favalli went up to Syracuse. So that opened up a job in like late August. So it was a real late opening job. And I interviewed for it, over the phone, and I interviewed in person for it. And I didn't really know how I did. It was like my first actual in-person interview for a broadcasting job. So I drove up for it that day, and they said, okay, we'll let you know by Friday. I was like, okay. So this is Wednesday at this point. Friday, I was leaving for Rockford. My dad and I were going to drive from Long Island to Rockford. So I didn't hear anything on Friday. So we just drove to Rockford. Stayed in Bowling Green overnight Friday night, and then ended up getting a phone call after I had lunch with my buddy from college. We were in Chicago. We went to Lou Malnati's for
best pizza for place lunch. In Chicago.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah. So we stopped by. So I was like texting like our landlord to get our keys, and as I was doing that, I got a phone call that I got the Adirondack job. So I turned around with my dad, and we went back. I called Bob Mills, and he was like super great. I was like, it's the most nervous, right? Like, he gives you a great opportunity, and now I have to call him and say I'm not going to take it like 2 days before I'm supposed to start. Mm-hmm. And he's like, dude, don't even worry about it. Like, you got a pro broadcasting job. Congratulations. Go enjoy it. I'm like, okay. So that's a weight off my shoulders. So yeah, so that was a fun weekend for me. So that was cool. Drove a lot of miles just to get a cool phone call. So yeah, so I started as a county executive. Yeah. What's that?
Some good pizza too.
Don't forget the pizza.
Exactly. Yeah, great pizza. So I started as an account executive. I was hired by Zach Dooley, who now works for the Los Angeles Kings. He does a lot of digital media for them. So he hired me. He was the director of communications at the time for the team. And we had John Edwards, who's the assistant director of communications. He now works for the development program in Plymouth. So we had those two guys working. And then Duels left after my first year. He went to go work for the Ontario Reign, kind of do like their insider digital and communication stuff. So luckily, I didn't have to be in sales very long. I got promoted to director of community relations after my first season, just because, you know, we had a small office. I think we had six or seven people in our office in Adirondack in total. So we wore a lot of hats. So after that year, which was a great year, a lot of fun, John left to go join the development program in for USA Hockey. And it was a small office. So just promote from within. So I ended up becoming the director of communications, all while not replacing the community relations role. So I had to take on a couple other things in my last few years there, but it was great. You know, great getting to learn under Zach Dooley was big for me. He is a very detail oriented person, and he had a great work ethic. So that was the first really good boss that I think I was able to learn from. Then working with John was great. We had such a great time working together, and you know, you go through minor league hockey. It's like, you know, it's fun. It's a roller coaster, and it develops you in ways that gets you ready for anything. Like, it's funny, this year we had a trip, like a four hour trip from like Bakersfield to here to play the next day. I was like, this is And this is nothing. I'm used to like a 3-3, yeah, like right. with travel every day in between. Like, no, I'm ready to go. So yeah, ECHL is such a great time. And, you know, I grew up so much in those 5 years.
With my experience in Indy, with the Indy Fuel, you need someone to take a chance on you. And after I left, after my second year of playing Division I college hockey at Colorado College, I moved back home to Chicago, and I knew I wanted to get into broadcasting. So I reached out to the team down in Indy Fuel of the ECHL, and their owner, Jim Hallett, who they had one broadcaster at the time, Andrew Smith, who was an Indiana yep. hockey historian, a legend in his own right in those parts, and a guy that has given everything to hockey in that state and in that city of Indianapolis, a wonderful teacher by day and a hockey broadcaster by night, and couldn't have been a nicer guy. But Jim was kind enough to take a chance on me and allow me to do the games. And so I did all of the Indy Fuel home games during the season, would drive down the old two-lane highway right from Chicago to Indy, do a couple of games, sometimes a 3-3, and then, you know, make a couple bucks and do the game, and then head back, and during the week would then work in a behind-the-scenes content role for NBC Sports Chicago. So in those early days for me, just keeping extremely busy, but you need someone to take a chance on you, and so that's why I, at least my start and to where I am at, would certainly not be where I'm at without a guy like Jim Hallett, owner of the Indy Fuel, who gave me an opportunity. And too, for, you know, Andrew Smith, who was my first ever consistent play-by-play guy that I worked with. And, you know, just a really, really special memory looking back. And I think it just goes to show that the ECHL and to the American League, which we'll get into, are developmental leagues, not just for players or referees, but staff and broadcasters and anybody who wants to work in a hockey front office. So, yeah, it's just, you need someone to take a chance. And then with the opportunity, right, as an Evan, as you've done, you got to make good on it. You know, you got to do the best you possibly can and make the most of your chance.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you made a good point too. It's not just players, not just broadcasters either. Like there's equipment guys who put in unbelievable hours, especially in the ECHL. A lot of those guys don't have assistant equipment staff. It's just them grinding, right? So it's that athletic trainers, just everyone. I think in that aspect, you work in minor league sports to make it to the top, and then to see guys get rewarded for guys, you know, everyone gets rewarded for their hard work. It's always awesome to see.
And now, not only are you the voice of the Coachella Valley Firebirds, but the director of broadcast and communication. So, aside from printing, what all does that consume you with, Evan, as far as the broadcasting side, but even more so, you know, being the director of broadcast and communications?
It's a lot, but it's nothing that I haven't done before, because we talked about, you know, working in the ECHL, doing 7,000 more different things on top of your normal job. So now I'm able to kind of hone in on a few jobs rather than the 7 that I previously were. But yeah, so the communication side of things, I deal with all of our media requests. I deal with all of our game notes. So, and scouts as well. So if a scout wants to come to a game, they come through me. They ask me for a credential. I set them up. We have a great staff here that really works hand in hand in everything. And I think that's something that, you know, I'm really fortunate for. You know, I send my list of stuff to the folks around the arena, so everyone's aware. I deal with a lot of the player stuff too. Kind of, if they have questions about things, I'm the guy to kind of go to, whether it be, you know, recommendations for things to do around the area, or how to handle their ticket requests and home and away. So I kind of play a little bit of a team services role as well, in that aspect. So, you know, traveling as well, helping out with bus times and helping Troy Bodie and Eric Ellens, our video coach, kind of help organize our travel party and all the different itineraries and stuff like that. So it's kind of every day is something new, which I think is something I really like about the job in general and working in sports, is that, you know, you don't get into the same thing over and over again. It's different. Every single day presents something new, which keeps it very exciting.
So Evan, you've now worked kind of your way throughout, you know, up to the AHL, but uniquely the Firebirds, when you came on, were a brand new team. So a startup in that sense. Is there some uniqueness to that experience, kind of help build a team from the ground up? I know you guys didn't even have a building when you started. I mean, spent a lot of time here in Seattle. Yeah. Kind of talk us through that experience of what it's like to start from nothing.
It was really interesting. I got hired in July of 22, so we didn't start playing until October. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the building was just a shell at the time. And we had a lot of season ticket holders. We still do. We have even more now. And there is so much buzz around the area for teams to, for fans to kind of enjoy something new in the Valley. That was something that was really cool to me, and how excited people are and how kind of everyone was bought in, not only just from a fan perspective, just from the organization standpoint as well, how involved the Kraken were in making this a successful venture for them and Oakview Group as well. So that was something that was really cool and unique, just how excited everyone was and how, you know, and also the uncertainty of what it's actually going to be was really cool too. It was kind of those, all right, well, we're going to start playing in October and our fans aren't going to see us for 2 months. How many of our fans are going to pay attention for those 2 months? Because
right.
it's not a traditional hockey market. Right. You have hockey fans living in the Coachella Valley during the winter months, mainly from, you know, the Washington area up in Canada as well, who come down in summer or in winter here and whatnot. But we didn't really know what the local community would think about it. And, you know, lo and behold, we had a season ticket member event right when we got into town in November. And there were about, I think, 2,400 people at this meet and greet thing.
Oh, wow.
And like, oh, this is pretty cool.
Serious.
And then opening night comes December 18th at the arena. And it was kind of a scramble, to be honest, to get into the building, because the day that they got clearance, like for no more hard hats, no more vests, was the first event in the building. And that was, I think, Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle were playing. And then there were two more concerts the next 2 days, and then one day off, and then the Firebirds played.
Oh, wow.
So there were four events in 5 nights, and we were the last of them. So we didn't really get a chance to like do anything in the building. Luckily, we were like the Iceplex side of things was finished, and the team was practicing for about a month on that side. They had their locker room and whatnot, but you know, we didn't get to really test videos or test how the sound would sound and all this different stuff. So we kind of had like 24 hours to make sure everything was good. So the game starts or the doors open and the place is flooded with people. It's, mm-hmm. you know, we sold out and 10,087 in attendance. And you can kind of tell it was a night out sort of vibe. You know, not a ton of Firebirds merchandise at the time. You know, people didn't really follow the team like they do now. And it was just crazy to see how you see the same people on December 18th, right? Get a couple of drinks with some friends, go out, enjoy a great evening. And hey, hockey kind of takes, you know, it's kind of what's going on in the background, right? You see the same people coming the next month. They're wearing Firebirds t-shirts now. The month after that, they're wearing Firebirds jerseys. And then a couple of weeks after that, the same people are wearing Firebirds jerseys with a player's last name on the back. So now these fans are all bought in, and it took 3.5-4 months for fans who may have even just, you know, we have tickets to the Firebirds, but you know, it just gives us something to do. Now they're bought in and they are everything. They're breathing Firebirds hockey. They're eating and sleeping and breathing Firebirds hockey. So it's really cool to see that develop in such a short time. And you know, we're not even two seasons in. We have groups of fans that travel to every single game, whether it be in Ontario or in Calgary or in Texas.
Wow.
It's crazy. It's unbelievable. We have a fantastic fan base. They're loud, they're passionate, and they're consistently encouraging, which is great.
That's great.
And that type of support and culture is cultivated through from the top down, ownership group, team management, team executives, you, Evan, spreading the word and doing the great job that you are. So, I mean, that's incredible what the Firebirds have been able to do as an organization and a franchise for everybody down in that area. And anybody that's a fan that's watching around the country or the world, because I know we got fans that do tune in from a lot of different places.
The unique experience we got of what, four home games, if you want to call it in quotes, home games for the Firebirds here in the Seattle area. I think it was really, really fun for me because, you know, I have not had a chance to go down there yet. But I still hear people and see people, you know, here in the in 32 Bar and Grill that are very big Firebirds fans, and they say it started from watching them play here in Seattle because they were like, well, I don't know what this minor league team is all about. And now they understand the difference between, you know, somebody coming up, you know, you've got your guys like Riker Evans and Joey mm-hmm. DeCord who started in Coachella and have worked their way up. Mm-hmm. And so they understand that symbiotic relationship now.
Yeah, and it goes the opposite way too. I think we've also had a lot of fans that live here in the Valley, don't know much about hockey, are Firebirds fans, and now they're Seattle Kraken fans. Mm-hmm. You know, I go into the game last night. I said hi to a couple of people who came over and recognized me, and you know, they said, "Yeah, we're here from the Valley." I think a couple other people are coming up from the Valley, ready to see the Kraken for the first time. Like, and they're wearing Kraken stuff. They're not wearing Firebirds stuff. They're wearing Kraken gear, which is really cool. So, like, I think it kind of goes both ways where – and that shows, again, as you said, how great from ownership and leadership from the top down that these two teams that are connected by one league, how great they work together and how strong the fan base is and how strong the fan base support is for both these teams. And, you know, I think it might be maybe the best AHL-NHL fan relationship possibly in hockey. So it's awesome to see. And like, you know, I mentioned how our fans travel and the Kraken fans do the same. And you know, seeing in LA yesterday, all the Kraken jerseys, I think a big group of Firebirds fans are going to the game in Anaheim coming up on Friday night, the 5th. So that'll be pretty cool too. So it's really cool to see just how tight knit this organization is.
Speaking of relationships, what's it like working with Gino Lamont and Grant Fuhr?
Gino is a lot of fun. Gino he's a news anchor here in the Valley for a long time. So it's very funny to walk around the arena with Gino. I'm not going to say it's humbling for me. I, you know, people say hi and would do whatever, but Gino always steals the show when you're walking around anywhere with him. He knows everybody. He's been in the Valley long enough. He knows, you know, someone yesterday, actually in the Root Sports booth, I went to say hi with Johnny and JT at one point, and the statistician, and he said, "Oh, make sure that my brother wants you to say hi to Gino Lamont." Okay, I'll say hi to Gino for you. So, yeah, so it's great working with Gino, and he's having a blast with this too. I think this was big for him personally to become involved with the team and kind of do something different too. And you know, as I was saying before, sports is so different. News is kind of the same way, but you know, you don't talk about as fun topics sometimes as hockey every day, right? So this is a little bit of a change for him. And Grant Fuhr, he's the best
legend.
He is, and he's incredibly humble. When you know, you so unassuming that he won five mm-hmm. Stanley Cups and is a hockey Hall of Famer. And mm-hmm. it's funny too because people will come up a lot of times and you know, they just know Grant from golf. They play golf with him, yeah. Or they know him around the Valley. Like the fact that he is a legendary goaltender, maybe one of the best who's ever played, mm-hmm. is just like not even on the radar for some of these people who come over and like wow. know him. Wow. But yeah, it's so funny between periods. I try to give him like not a lot to do during intermissions, just because of like the lines of people that come up and just want a photo taken with him, just want to shake his hand. Especially because we have a lot of fans from the Edmonton area and a lot of Canadian fans who really, really see Grant as like their hockey idol. Yeah. So it's pretty cool. And I always have an extra Sharpie in my bag if anyone, you know, if he forgets his.
Is there something with milkshakes too or something? Someone likes to drink milkshakes there?
Yeah,
that's right up my alley.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I think it was like when they were first. So again, the building opened in December. So they finally got all the concessions like squared away. Probably like February or March was when everything was solidified. So they put a Mr. Softy stand like right behind, because we're on the concourse level where our broadcast perch is. We're basically in like an ADA section that they transformed and put a couple tables there. So we have a great seat right at center ice, and we're kind of in the crowd, which is cool. And fans can stop by at the concourse level and whatnot. So they put a Mr. Softy stand right behind us, and that piqued Grant's interest. So that became like his thing. He would buy, you know, myself and him a milkshake before every game. And he would try out all these different flavors. I'm a pretty plain guy. Like, just vanilla is fine with me. So he would try out all the flavors. He'd give them feedback, whether he liked them or not. And I think it got to the point there was like 9 or 10 flavors. I don't know how many are still there, but now we did it every single game. And it's, you know, I had to like plan my week around. Like, I'm having, you know, 3 games this week.
Three milkshakes.
I have to plan my whole month around these things.
Yeah, right.
But now it's gotten to the point. Opening night this year, he puts in his order like at early. He walks over like at 5:30 or 5:45 and puts in his order and lets the people know that whatever. And now we get him delivered.
Ooh.
So like right as the puck's about to drop, or like the first whistle, nice workers over at the Mr. Softy stand come over to our area and drop off 2 milkshakes.
How about that?
Every game. So it's the power of Grant Fuhr. So we appreciate the milkshakes.
How do I get
sometimes
that?
Sometimes
how do I get that? That kind of treatment, man. I got to be a Hockey Hall of Famer with 5 cups, I guess, right?
Cool. I think 5 Stanley Cups. If you have 4, I don't think you can do it. 5.
That's the threshold, yeah.
5 is the way to go, but it's crazy. I think also, too, Grant, like, he's at, you know, he'll ask. He doesn't really care about asking for things. So it's awesome. He's awesome to work with. He's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. He knows everybody, and everybody knows him again from different avenues. Again, man. People know him from Hockey Hall of Fame status to, oh, that's Grant. I see him a couple of times at least a week playing golf.
It's one of those things that growing up, he was always one of my favorite players because there's not a lot of people named Grant in the world. And so
there you go, yeah. Grant.
Second Grant. There you go. That's great. So.
Grant squared.
Representing Grant in the Hall of Fame.
That's right. There you go. Evan, other people you're around and work with pretty frequently is the coaching staff of the Firebirds, headed by Dan Bylsma, the head coach, Jess Campbell, assistant coach, and Stu Bickel, among others. What's it like being around them and interacting with them on a day-to-day basis?
Dan's a lot of fun to be around. He, you know, he makes it – the culture is just – it's lax and it's fun, but it's serious at the same time, the fact that everyone's bought in and everyone knows what is that expected of them. And I think a lot of that, too, comes from – we had an older team last year. We had a lot of veteran players, a lot of guys who have played a lot of hockey in their career, and they bought in very quickly to Dan's teachings and Dan's leading. So that was something that made it pretty easy. So the expectation downstairs is we're going to win, but we're going to have fun. So Dan keeps it light. He's, you know, he's a professional coach who's won a Stanley Cup and he's won a Jack Adams Award. So the resume is there for Dan. And, you know, I connect with him because he's a fellow Falcon as myself. Mm-hmm. So, he's awesome to be around. Jess is great. You know, she has such a strong hockey mind, and she's an unbelievable skater. It's awesome. I like watching when she does a lot of those skill training with our guys, mm-hmm. Just because like the way she skates is incredible, and our guys sometimes they're not even close to keeping up. But don't tell them I said that. But it's great, and Stu is awesome. He's our defensive coach, and he has so many great stories of him playing in the NHL, and he's another great hockey mind, and he's just so fun to be around. So yeah, our coaching staff is awesome, and even Eric Ellens too, our video coach. Yeah. Talk college hockey with him all the time. He's a lot of fun, and Colin Zulianello, our goaltending coach, is one of the nicest guys around. So yeah, the coaching staff here is fantastic. So it's a great way, especially for me selfishly, my first couple years in the AHL, to have a incredibly solid staff like that has been massive.
So what's the state of the team right now? I mean, as of now, record is 40 14, 5, and 4. 89 points. Second most in the American Hockey League. Points in 9 of the last 10. 33 of the 40 wins have been in regulation. What's gone right for the Firebirds again this season?
Well, it's funny because the start of the year didn't seem too hot for the Firebirds, especially at home. The team was winning games on the road, but a lot of times the fan base for the most part only not cares about home games, but they're in attendance for home games, so they see a lot of what's going on. So we started the year, I think 2-5 or something at home, and fans were starting to freak out and whatnot. But it's all, it took a little bit to get the consistency squared away with the team. And once the consistency got in there, it was like picking up right where it left off. Right, you have older players, the guys who've been around, the guys from last year, Cole Lynn, Max McCormick, Andrew Podorowski. And then you have some newcomers who have also played a lot of games. Cale Fleury has been down for the majority of the year. Devin Shore, another guy too. Marion Student H has played a handful of NHL games as well. So there are a lot of guys who kind of fit roles really nicely for the Firebirds. Connor Carrick, another one of those guys who's played a lot of professional hockey games. So it's kind of like it took a little bit for things to kind of fall into place. I don't know if that had to do anything with, you go to game 7 of the cup final and you lose, right? Which is obviously tough. And the most of our guys were in that situation last year. But you look at it from that point going into a new season after going to the final and you think, okay, well, we can – I don't know if this actually happened, but you can look at it from a standpoint, oh, okay, well, we just got to win that, get that overtime goal in game 7 this year.
Like, right.
Well, you have to get there first, right? Yeah, like you can't just expect that to happen. I think I'm not sure if that was the case to start the season. I think it was maybe just more consistency needed to find itself, and some puck luck didn't go their way earlier in the season too. I think early in December they were a handful of games where they outshot the opposition heavily and only scored a goal or got shut out in those games too. So everything kind of turned around right at the beginning of 2024, the calendar year, and since then, they've been incredible. And, yeah, points in 9 of the last 10. I think it's actually 15 of the last 16 they have points in. And I think 26 of their last 28 they have points in as well. So it's just been consistency. And the expectation now is they're going to win the game, right? Mm-hmm. It was funny when, the Firebirds clinched the playoff spot a few weekends ago. It was a shootout loss to Bakersfield. And we were on the bus ride coming home, and we just clinched the playoff spot. We earned a point in the game, but it was like the bus ride home to start was like we just lost. That was kind of the mentality of it. Right. So that's kind of where it looks into perspective. Like, okay, if this team doesn't win a game, it's like that. That's the goal. You win every. That's the expectation. You win every single game. Mm-hmm. So things have been going great, and they have a. I think now an 8-point lead in the Pacific Division. 7 is the magic number right now to clinch the division, which would be huge. That gives them the first round bye in the playoffs. You don't have to play best of 3 play-in round they had to play last year. So, there's a lot to look forward to, and I think guys are really looking forward to that bye week. So they're going to make sure that they clinch the division.
For some folks who are Kraken fans but have not watched the Firebirds, when they're playing at their best, what kind of hockey does it look like?
It is fast and controlled. It is, it's the fire. When the Firebirds are playing at their best, they shut you down defensively. And the fact is, it's not really a dump and chase game. It's just a possession game. And, they'll get to the red line and outwork you. And they could score not so much at will, but they find the right times to kind of put the dagger in you. And that was kind of the best way to describe the Firebirds last season was, hey, they can be down 2-0 after the second period, but they'll hold their momentum going into the third period. So there's like a window. I used to describe it last year. There's a window where you could score against the Firebirds, right? There is, a 4 to 5 minute window if they're at their best where you can finally get a goal and you need to score a bunch in that time frame. And if you don't, then the Firebirds are going to find their wind at some point and make you pay for not capitalizing on a mistake. So a great example is the other night, the Firebirds played the Texas Stars, and the team was down 2-1 with 5 minutes left in the third period. And the Firebirds weren't playing great by any means through the first 40 minutes of play, even the first 55 minutes of play. They were just hanging in there. And you could tell that once they got a goal, that game would be over. And that would tie the game at that point. So Andrew Podorowski scores just a Andrew Podorowski drive to the net goal where he makes an unbelievable play and ties the game with, I think, 4:45 to go. And the Firebirds scored twice more in the last 4 minutes to win the game 4-2. Like, that's what Firebirds hockey is at its best, mm-hmm. where, hey, like, you get your opportunity to try to score a goal, but we'll hold on until whenever we see the weakness and attack. So it's like a predator versus prey mentality for the Firebirds.
As we begin to wrap up, I'd love to just ask you about a couple of players that have come up to the Kraken and have made a really strong impact. First off, Riker Evans has come up, and he's looked like he's played the NHL for a couple of years already with the calmness that he plays with. And also Shane Wright, as of the time of recording this podcast, we've seen two games from him, first one of which he scored a goal. So would love to get your take on not even just the type of players that those guys are, but how you've seen their game and being closer to them, seeing them as people mature over the last couple of years.
It's funny. Riker's very unique personality. Riker last year, you know, he came in as a rookie and, you know, he developed into like kind of a jokester on the team. And then Matt Tennyson used him as like sidekick in a series we did called Teddy's Talks, just because Riker was a rookie. So we put him in a bathing suit and a life jacket, and he was like the sidekick on this talk show. And he came back in to this season as a whole new Riker Evans. Like, he had like a swagger to him, and I like noticed it right away. And the reason I first noticed it, it was our first week at a training camp, but he was down and he met with the media, and he dropped a nice S-bomb to our media.
Oh, wow.
Not at them, but yeah. It was in his answer.
Yeah.
And he looked directly at me when he said it, and he smirked. I was like, oh, no, he's feeling good. So, yeah. He came in with a new energy, and he walked away. He's like, you like that one? I'm like, no, but try not to cuss in the middle of your, you know, media scrums. But yeah, he knew exactly what he was doing. But he's a guy that I saw grow in the last year into kind of like a shy rookie to a guy who, when you watch him play too, it's like I saw a lot of change last year in his style of play when he figured out that he can hit people and they'll fall down. Mm-hmm. I think he was kind of, I don't know, timid to hit people early when he started, just because the jump from junior hockey to pro hockey is substantial, right? Mm-hmm. And the guys are bigger and more mature, and they played more hockey. But he started throwing his body around, and I don't think guys were expecting it,
right?
Especially the guys on the receiving end. So once he started getting that to his game, he started to get that little edge to him, and he's just kind of been that same player ever since. He's an offensive-minded player who scored big goals in Firebirds history. He scored a triple overtime winner against Calgary in the playoffs last year. And he scored one of the goals in game 7 in the Calder Cup final. So he's a guy that's just been consistent pretty much since the halfway point of last year. And it's great to see him getting a great opportunity with the Kraken. And, you know, we hope to have him back for our postseason run. We'd love to have him back. And I think that's kind of the plan. So we're excited for Riker. And, you know, that's the job here for the Firebirds, is develop the next level of talent for the Kraken. So for the Shane Wright point of view, Shane had come to us last year for a conditioning loan. So he played 5 games, and you could tell he had a little bit of an edge to his game in terms of he wanted to belong. He wanted to show that, hey, I've been scratched in the NHL. I can score goals. And he did. And he moved his legs. He took opportune shots. He was just really smart for those 5 games. He scored 4 goals in those 5 games, and he was great. But he was also, the way he came into that too, and we don't know what we're getting, right? Hey, the top prospect is coming down for 5 games. Like, okay, well, what are we going to get? But Shane was most gracious about it. He was excited. He was, you know, willing to do anything. And then, you know, I bothered him a ton because we had a million media requests, and I shielded most of them. But got to get some of the big ones in there. I was like, hey, Shane, are you good to do this? He's like, yeah, sure, whatever. Whatever you need, I could do it, whatever you need. And that's kind of been his mentality with us, which has been great. And then he came back to us in the postseason, or right before the postseason. And, you know, he didn't have a normal year last year, right? You're 18, 19 years old, playing your first season of pro hockey, right? And he starts up at the NHL, gets sent down to the AHL, goes back up to the NHL, scores his first NHL goal, and you know the story. Then he goes to the juniors, World Juniors, wins the gold medal. Is he going to come back up to the NHL? What are they going to do? Goes back to juniors, gets traded in juniors. His team gets bounced in the first round, and then he comes back to the Firebirds, right? That is a lot for someone who is under the age of 20 to experience in their first year of pro hockey. So I think this year for him was his first time as a pro in his very short pro career that he can actually focus and say, okay, well, I'm going to be here this year. This is where I'm going to be. I think Ron Francis also did a great job of explaining that to everyone too. Like, this is a year for Shane to focus on being Shane and being a pro hockey player.
Right.
And he's worked on his two-way game. He's become a way better defensive forward. His back checking has been great. He blocks shots. He gets there at the right times, and he's been great on the power play. He's been a little snake bit in the goal scoring column as of late, and I think he's been kind of feeling that. He scored his 20th goal of the season last week in Calgary, and you can just tell that was a weight off his shoulder, and he was kind of waiting for it a little bit. So, but that was another hardworking play by him. He's an incredibly smart player. And he's developing into being what the Kraken organization thinks he's going to be, which is a top level player for years to come. And yeah, you know, sometimes it takes a little bit of time. Sometimes it takes, you know, some development. And, you know, hey, it's hard to mold an 18, 19 year old kid into what you think he's going to be in 5-10 years. It doesn't happen overnight, and you know he's been taking the strides to get there, and he's been doing a great job. And you know, as a person, he is one of the most mature people I think I know. And you forget sometimes he's 20 years old. Yeah. The way like he carries himself. So
right,
he's great to have around, and it's awesome to see him score that goal the other night. I know he was pumped about it, as he should be. And again, he's a guy who the Firebirds are going to hope to see a lot of production come playoff time. So we're excited to have him back, but again, we're excited that he's been up in the NHL and playing meaningful minutes up there.
January 5th is when the kid turned 20 years old, and I think it's especially in sports, and when you have as much hype as he does and he has had in his career, it's really easy to want to rush things. So you brought up the great point, Evan. I think it has been a lot of applause and good words needed for Ron Francis and the entire hockey staff and hockey operations side of making sure that he gets pretty much a full year in the American Hockey League to develop, to get confidence. And look, he comes up, he gets a goal in his first game since the call-up here later on in the year with the Kraken. And so whether it's him, whether it's Ryan Winterton, whether it's Logan Morrison, doesn't matter. Players develop at different rates. And once you can identify, okay, well, we think this guy can get a little more opportunity, we're going to bring him up, or need a little more time to marinate down in the minors and learn the pro game, because the pro game is a lot different than the junior game or the college game. Some players take more time. So ever since his call-up, I have really been impressed with his confidence with the puck. I think he's gotten quicker, which has helped him, especially through the middle of the ice. And when he came up to play for the Kraken, I mean, he's playing with Jordan Eberle and Jaden Schwartz, two guys who know what to do with the puck and guys that have played a long time in the league. So I think that was also a great line to put him on. So it's great to see the fact that he is getting better and stronger and faster and more confident, because I think when he's a confident hockey player, that's when he's playing at his best without any sort of hesitation.
Yeah, and I think also too, it's I said before, like the meaningful minutes, and what I meant by that is, you know, it's hard for, and I'm sure you know Ron Francis and the Kraken hockey operations staff struggle with this too, because you don't want to call up a guy to play on the third and fourth line and get him 6 to 7 minutes a night. That's not you know the way that you want to develop a player. So when you see a guy who's getting all this ice time down in the American Hockey League, And you might, hey, why don't we just leave him there for a little bit? He's playing where we want him to play, but we don't have a spot for him to play right now. And, you know, from the Kraken point of view, up in the first two lines, we don't really have that power play spot. And this is from a few months ago, right? When you could say, oh, why don't they call up Shane Wright? Well, because he's playing top minutes here in the American Hockey League,
right,
and he's getting used to playing top minutes. To call him up and have him play minimal minutes where he doesn't really get a chance at special teams or anything like that.
And also, you know, too, Evan, I don't mean to cut you off, but all he's ever been is the guy, you know? And all of, like, he's always been the guy to score, the guy to play 15 to 20 minutes every game. And all of a sudden now you're not playing as much. It's given the situation, it's given the lineup. You got to take all that into consideration, but would totally agree that if you want him to continue to get better, he's got to play.
He's got to play. And you mentioned too, like, again, he's just 20 years old.
Yeah.
And you said it too, he's been the guy. Since he's been 13, 14 years old, he's been the guy. And now it's a situation where he has to keep playing. And he's not going to be the guy right now for the Kraken, right? He's you want him to be. That's what the future is going to be. But he has to be able to develop and get to that standpoint where he will be the guy. You just have to have a little bit of patience, and he'll get there.
Just before we end with some rapid fire, there's one last guy that I really want to ask you about, Evan. It's a guy that is so important to a hockey team for the role that he plays. I think he is as good of a pro as there is in the entire league. And by a pro, I mean how you conduct yourself on a day-to-day basis. And his name's John Hayden. He's played in and out of the National Hockey League for a long time, a huge part of the Coachella Valley Firebirds. But how much does he mean to the team, both on the ice, but I think even more importantly, in the room off the ice?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I missed him earlier when I was naming off all the veterans that Firebirds rely on. And Hayes is crucial to this team. He, off the ice, you mentioned, he is a pro's pro. And it's funny, too, because I remember looking at his stats last year and looking through his bio and whatnot, right? And the guy had not played a lot of AHL games. He hadn't played in the AHL before last year, since, I think, the 16-17 season, where he played some games with Rockford. So he's been in the NHL for a while. And it had to be a little bit of adjustment for him, I'm sure, you know, being a consistent roster guy in the NHL to being sent down. And you know, no matter if you played 10 games or 400 games in the National Hockey League, it does, you know, you do feel the send down. And I'm sure it takes a little bruise and whatnot, but he has been so great with the younger guys, the older guys, and the fans. The fans love him here. And he's just like the most genuinely nice person. I thought he was, the first time I had a conversation with him, I thought he was messing with me because of how nice he was being. I thought he was just like, I don't know. I was like, there's no way a guy is like this kind and genuine. But like getting to know him now for almost 2 years, that's the way he is. He's like, he's an awesome guy. And now he's really excited. He has his buddy Connor Carrick playing with him. So they're a riot, those two guys. So John Hayden is he's great to have around. And he, you know, it's one of those things where you look at signing a player like John Hayden and you get what you get on the ice, where, you know, he's a guy who could score goals. He's a physical player. He could drop the gloves if need be, and more the sort of the time he does. And he's a physical player out there, as I said. And you get the locker room John Hayden too, which is it's a big thing for the locker room to have a guy like John Hayden around constantly.
With a guy like that in your room, he's going to hold people accountable, and he's going to help the young guys along by both advice and showing it by his actions day in and day out. A great player and vital to any team who wants to be successful. So keep up the great work, Johnny Hayden. Okay, rapid fire time, Evan. I just want a couple of words that come to mind. The first couple of words that come to mind when I list off this next group of players. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Ryan Winterton.
Smart. Smart player. Is that a couple? That's a couple, right?
That's perfect. That's right. I guess I should have clarified too. It could either be the kind of player or person if it comes to mind. They got a little personality. Feel free to comment on that too. Okay, so Winterton, smart guy. I like smart guys. You're a smart guy, Evan. So are you, Grant.
I try.
Okay, Logan Morrison.
Consistent. He's a consistent player who just knows where to be at the right time and looks like he belongs.
John Hayden.
Genuine. He's a genuine person, extremely kind, and a great player on and off the ice.
M&M, double M, Max McCormick.
Max McCormick, he is a pro's pro. He knows what is expected of him, and he goes beyond that, and he's a fun guy to be around. And we always have to watch our backs when things are going on with Max McCormick. Sometimes he likes to throw the occasional prank or two.
Love it, veteran. Riker Evans.
Garth, he's unique. He's a unique person. He's hilarious. I love Riker. He's so funny. I don't know if he's intentionally funny, but I think he's funny. So I'll go with funny.
Cale Fleury.
I'll go consistent again for Cale Fleury. Defensively on the ice, he's like you know what you get with Cale Fleury. He's going to make a big play to keep the puck at the blue line. He'll make things happen for you. So on it. Let's say on it. Those are two words. He's on it.
Andrew Podorowski.
He is
big smile on your face right now.
Yeah.
For those who can't see.
Potsy's a I don't know if I could sum up Potsy in just a couple of words. He's another vet, pro's pro. He's been around the block, won a couple of Calder Cups, a couple of scoring titles in the league. Great guy. Another prankster, loves golf. I don't even know if I can sum up.
Yeah.
Potsy is just Potsy. Yeah. That's what he
a lot
is.
Of good
that's
guys and a lot of pranksters. I like it. That's a good makeup for any hockey team.
You got to watch your back constantly.
Connor Carrick.
Intelligent. He is a very, on the ice, smart guy, but off the ice.
Yeah.
I'm going to say intelligent because he's smart, number one. And number two, he wants to learn all the time. Like he'll pick anyone's brain and talk to them for 45 minutes to an hour about whatever it is, like any topic. He just wants to. He wants to know. He wants to learn. So I guess a student would be a good one for him. But he also likes to have a bunch of knowledge about stuff.
Right, great guy. Joey Decord, the mayor, who is obviously now with Seattle, but is very, very, very well known down in the Coachella Valley area.
Yeah, the mayor I think is actually a great way to sum him up. He knows exactly like he's great with people. He's going to be when his hockey career is all said and done, he's going to be a fantastic broadcaster. Like he could be on a panel, he can be talking about hockey. He's awesome. Like he's a people person through and through.
Shane Wright.
He is mature. He's a mature kid who likes to, you know, you could tell how much hockey means to him and how passionate he is about the game. He is constantly watching highlights. You know, we're on the bus and the coaches are watching video. You can see him kind of like poking around and seeing maybe what they're taking a look at. Mm-hmm. But, he's mature. He's a mature guy who loves the game of hockey and just wants to get better.
And lastly, one of my favorites. And please, a few more words than just a few, if you'd like, Evan.
Sure.
Chris Drieger.
Oh, he is the best. I love Drieger. He is hilarious. He has such a dry humor to him. I could tell you a couple stories. So Drieger, when he got here last year, if you want, there's a locker room tour video on the Firebirds social media channels that he did, and he mentions it in that he bought new shower heads for the locker room. He didn't like the shower heads that we had, so he went to Home Depot and bought and installed himself new ones.
Wow.
So that's, and he's just like an all around good guy. Like he goes out of his way to, you know, to make sure everyone's having a good day. He's just a good dude. Like he's just a great dude. Like he's awesome to have around. And he's a goalie that also, like, you know, being around goalies, I've seen everything from the incredibly weird game day goalie where you can't even look him in the eye to a guy who like will just talk all day on a day's playing. And Dries is like, you wouldn't even know he's like a goalie in that situation.
Yeah.
He's awesome. I love having Dries around, and I hope he finds his way back to the NHL pretty soon.
Yeah, I don't doubt that he will. He's got a an incredible drive, a phenomenal skill set, and a guy that's been through a lot, having torn his ACL last summer, which and the road to recovery there was pretty intense.
Yeah, this, and again, it hasn't been an easy year for him this year either, right? You go into the off season, this past off season, as pretty much the backup here in the Coachella Valley, and you go into Kraken training camp in the last year of your contract, knowing that, you know, you'll either start the year as a backup or be down in the American Hockey League, and you have to live with whatever that choice would be. And ultimately, the Kraken decided that Joey DeCord was going to be the backup, and Chris Drieger has come down here, and he's been great. Like, it's the mentality for him has been fantastic. And, you know, he knows as a goalie, he has to kind of have like good mentality because it's contagious in a way. So right. He's just been a true professional throughout the entire couple years.
And a lot of guys in that situation, it's easy to go down and pout and it's easy to feel sorry for yourself. But, Driggs is the type of guy that's got ambition. And, I would agree with you, Evan. I don't think it's too long before he's back in the National Hockey League. An absolute beauty is what I would call Chris Drieger.
That is the perfect word for Chris Drieger. Beauty. He is. He truly is.
Well, Evan, thank you so much for your time today. It was not only productive, but I hope that a lot of our fans are able to learn a lot about you and not only the great job that you do, but all of the things that you've done to get to where you are. Very much appreciate your time. Keep it rocking. Incredible year so far for the Firebirds, and hope to have you back on at some point in the near future.
Hey, appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much for having me. Hope to see you guys down in the Valley soon. Maybe you could take a trip for some postseason Firebirds action. I'll make sure you guys are well taken care of.
That sounds like a hell of a plan, but there's only one thing that I would request while I'm at the game, Evan.
Milkshake.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Either mint chocolate chip or a chocolate milkshake. That would be absolutely perfect.
Strawberry for me.
You got it.
There you go.
You got it. You guys both got it.
All right, Evan.
See you guys down here soon.
Best of luck, man. Keep it rocking.
Thanks, Evan.
All right. See you guys. Yeah.
Signals from the Deep is the official podcast of the Seattle Kraken. Hosted by Nick Olchek and produced by me, Grant Beery. Have a question for Nick? Leave a voicemail on the Signals from the Deep hotline at 206-279-7810 or send an email to signals@seattlekraken.com. Your question could be featured on an upcoming episode.